So I got some new iPads.
What kind did you get?
I got those $299 education iPads that Apple came out with. The just the one that's just called iPad.
Just
the one that basically replaced. Yeah, the one that basically just replaced the Air 2.
So is the Air no longer a thing?
Yeah, the Airs are gone. They're gone, which makes me sad because I really like my Air, even though I'm hoping to replace it soon.
I guess they floated off or evaporated, whatever you want to say.
But this one sort of takes the shape of the Air. It's like they took the form factor of the Air 1 and they put some better internals in it and they just kind of re-released it and dropped the price on it. I kind of like it. It's pretty neat. Got 30 of them in. So.
Well, that's cool. So where are you going to be putting those?
Second grade is getting another round of 30. So they will have actually 55 now because they have 25 right now and they're getting... They're going to get in 30 more. So.
Very cool. So it's not 29 they're getting?
No, not 29. They're getting 30.
Oh, okay. I figured one of them might have stayed in your office or something.
It's tempting, but I want the new Pro, so I don't think I want to hang on to one of these.
Okay. Well,
I really want that new 10.5 Pro.
It does look awesome.
It's that screen, that 120 megahertz refresh.
I wouldn't go megahertz. That'd be like 120 million cycles a second.
There you go. 120 hertz refresh screen. It just, I hear it looks so good.
Yeah, I'd love to play with the one myself. I'm more curious with what other new features they've added into the operating system. It looks awesome.
Well, from what I'm reading online, it looks like everybody that's getting them is automatically loading the iOS 11 developer beta on it because they want to use the new multitasking and stuff on it.
Well, why not? I mean, that's probably why they bought it.
But then I read an article yesterday that says reasons why you shouldn't load the iOS 11 developer beta, and I'm like, it really just needs one reason. It's a beta. Things are broken.
Yes, and in fact, for example, running a beta, before we could even start recording, I had to reboot the Chromebook. And, well, of course, I told it, no, I'm not going to do that right now because we're about to record. And, no, Google went, oh, yes, you are, and updated the whole Android subsystem underneath. So
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we love the beta channels.
Well, you know, that happened with Windows 10 on some Surface Books for me. A lady's Surface Book installed the Creators Update, and like her mouse and keyboard quit working until after it rebooted. And so it's just really weird.
Yeah, please click shutdown.
But that wasn't beta, so I mean, it just... It's always best just to reboot after updates anyway, so...
I agree, 100%.
It's just they always happen when you don't want them to.
Well, I never want to reboot, I mean... How many times are you allowed to click the remind me in 4 hours button?
No kidding. I still do that.
I think after about 2 weeks, it's like, nah, this is enough. We've already pushed out some after this.
Yeah, let's go ahead and install these, and then you could run it again when you get done.
Yes.
But speaking of Microsoft Surface, the Surface laptop is now available in stores to purchase, not just pre-order.
Woohoo, fuzzy laptops for everyone.
But also with that comes... I guess you would say maybe the first x86 app or 32-bit app or whatever app to hit the Windows Store with Office?
No, it's not the first. Actually, you want to know what the very first one was? It's quite...
Was it a fart app?
No. Notepad.
Notepad.
Notepad. Microsoft released Notepad into the store to test the Centennial Bridge.
Oh, that's great. I like Notepad.
Yeah.
Notepad++ is better.
Yeah. Notepad was the first, but this is a real app.
Yeah, this is Office allowed to install and update and purchase Office through the Windows Store. I mean, this is Microsoft, as you say, eating their own dog food.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that they're doing this because they've always had this really annoying app in the App Store called Get Office that you could install, but it didn't get Office through the store.
Yes, that actually even comes pre-installed on computers now, too.
Yeah, it's annoying whether you want or not.
So it's like, Get Office. Well, I'm going to go ahead and put Office on here. You would think it'd be smart enough to know that if it's got Office on there to remove that app.
No, and it will still remind you if you've installed any other version besides 365. Hey, would you like to get Office?
Already have it. I don't want it again.
Yeah.
How many offices can you run on one computer?
One?
One. Okay. But more Microsoft news. A leaked version of Windows 10 Pro is coming. Or, well, got leaked. It's called Workstation is coming back. And with it comes some pretty neat features that I kind of like. The one thing that I find really great is Microsoft is kind of doubling down again with their ReFS, the Resilient File System. So it looks like they're going to do some fault tolerance and optimized for large data volumes. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they released this file system a few years ago and then didn't recommend it to anyone because it was missing some key features. I mean, one of them was shadow copying, so a lot of backup software wouldn't work at all on it. And then with a cluster, it was originally built to try to get a ZFS type file system for delta changes and all those modern stuff. I mean, I think they're called B-tree file systems, but they're having to add all those features in one at a time because it was, when they released it, it was 100% incompatible with NTFS software.
And they're also allowing support, and I didn't know that it actually had a limit, but they're actually going to allow up to 4 CPUs. I didn't know Microsoft had, or Windows had, a limit of 2 CPUs, mm-hmm. and up to 6 terabytes of RAM.
I know, it's awesome. It's a throwback to the old Windows NT workstation SKU, because back in the day on Windows NT, I know some of the people listening to this probably weren't even alive back then, but Windows NT actually ran on x86, PowerPC, Spark. It ran on Itanium. It ran on every, not Itanium, that wasn't even around, but it ran on every processor architecture then, and they had a workstation SKU that would allow up to 4 sockets. It was pretty cool. And the reason is the old Pentium Pro.
So now you need a Windows 10 workstation with 4 Threadrippers and 6 terabytes of RAM, right?
Dude,
that's
gonna be
your next gaming PC?
Yes, my next gaming PC will be Windows 10 workstation with 4 32-core EPICs.
I still like the Threadripper name. That's great.
It is awesome.
And in other Microsoft news, they added OpenBSD support for Azure in their cloud storage solution. And that means we can have OpenPF and pfSense running in the, well, not OpenPF, but PF and pfSense running in the cloud. So you can have a virtual router if
yeah,
you want
to. Yeah, I think this is actually a bigger deal than people realize because Hyper-V, Microsoft's virtualization platform, has always struggled with BSD in the past. And to get networking support working in BSD, you had to use legacy network controllers in it, which stunk. So they must have fixed it finally.
I have very limited experience with OpenBSD, just mainly playing around with PF and pfSense. I just know that that can be a pretty complicated OS, especially when I was looking into like upgrading it or whatever, and it's like, that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
It's almost like OpenBSD is like made, it's like, okay, you run it, you do your one thing, and you just leave it alone and don't ever touch it.
Well, OpenBSD is the secure BSD. Like, any of them are really insecure, but we got FreeBSD that's supposed to be all nice and easy to use. OpenBSD is the secure one, and then there's NetBSD, which runs on everything from to a toaster to a refrigerator.
I guess you can turn your refrigerator into a firewall.
Yeah.
So do you think DigitalOcean is going to contact Microsoft Azure and maybe have them provide their firewall services?
Maybe.
Like we talked about last week.
That'd be interesting.
But I do love me some pfSense. I really do like that. I ran it at the house on an old desktop for a while, and it really is a pretty decent firewall. I mean, it's got some great features in it.
Oh, it does everything from internet caching to proxying to, gosh, you name it. Yeah, load balancing even. It's a very feature-rich product.
It even has a great price, too.
Yes, the best price.
Yeah, free, 50 free.
Yep.
And then something I didn't ever think I would want to talk about, Firefox released an update. They're at version 54. I think it's getting a little out of hand. A new version every 6 months, and so they were going to increment.
Let's see, what version number are we on Chrome now?
I think 59 installed 59. On my Mac today.
Well, I guess Chrome's still bigger and badder than them. They got the bigger number.
Yeah, they got the bigger number. Didn't Firefox switch to this method because Chrome was doing it or something?
Yes, that's exactly what they did. They used to only switch the main version number when they did huge feature changes. Like, this would have really been like Firefox 7, but
I think the last time I used Firefox, it was on like 4.
Well, I keep Firefox installed on my machine because it does have some pretty good developer tools in it. And every now and then there's an application that just likes to misbehave in Chrome.
Well, when it finally updates to version 54, you will get individualized processes for the tabs.
I had it yesterday, actually. It updated, and it took about 5 minutes for me to lock my whole machine up with it.
There you go.
Yep.
It was always...
Firefox, we always complain about Chrome eating memory, but dang, Firefox was the granddaddy of that.
Firefox, to me, was always the Java plugin of internet browsers.
Well, you know, they have killed all plugin support, native plugin support, like the NAPI plugins, except for one. Flash.
Flash will never die. As much as we want it to, I don't think it's ever going to go away.
It's like that all but this one. Even Chrome's like that. All plugins don't work but this one.
And, you know, I actually had to push out of group policy to make Flash run on my Chrome.
Yeah.
Because Chrome actually switched to a thing where it actually prompted you whether you wanted to run it or not. Safari started doing that, too, I think, with the Sierra release. But I had some students click no, and then their stuff wouldn't work.
And they're like, I have no idea how to fix it.
Yeah, and so I had to push out a group policy that basically forces Flash to run, which I hate, but it is what it is.
Well, it's fine. We have so much old legacy software that's written in Flash. But back to Firefox, I really am excited for them. I've always had a lot of respect for the Firefox project because they pretty much exist to keep the internet standards open.
And Firefox actually owns one of my favorite services, Pocket, now. So I have to support Mozilla, too.
So that's why it's integrated into the new Firefox.
Yes, Pocket. I like Pocket as my read it later service. So I actually just became a Pocket premium subscriber because they had like a deal where if you signed up, you can get it for like half the price full year or whatever like that. So
does that mean you're going to install Firefox on your Mac?
Absolutely not.
Oh, come on.
I'm curious, though, if the Mac version brings individual processes too.
It should, because they do share a code base.
So when it crashes, when one tab crashes, the whole thing will just crash later.
Yeah, I didn't experience that. I had to hit the power button. Yeah, I had to hold the power button.
Oh, that's just poor Firefox. At least they finally gave up on their phone system, their phone OS.
This is true.
Firefox OS or whatever.
Yeah, both people that ran it.
I do love a Red Panda. Red Pandas are pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the Firefox OS, I installed it on my Nexus 4. There was like two phones that supported it. And it was like developer phones that only like 1,000 people bought already. Market share, right?
Yeah, but they finally killed it.
Yeah.
Which they need to focus on. I mean, like you said, out of all the people that are building web browsers, I mean, they're actually kind of doing it for the right reasons. I mean, they're trying to keep up with web standards and stuff like that, but they also built Firefox with like privacy and security in mind, even from the very beginning. They're not playing catch up on a lot of things like Edge and, I don't know if Chrome was kind of like that, too, at the beginning, but...
Yeah, I mean, we need more rendering engines to keep standards alive, because everybody else... If we don't, we're just going to end up with WebKit, and we got to have more than one.
Yeah, or, I mean, Trident. We can always have Trident back.
No, Trident needs to die. It needs to go drowned.
No more Trident. Well, we're going to swing into our topic today. We're going to talk about cloud storage, what we're doing with it, how we're doing it, some different types of cloud storage, and even some roll-your-own cloud storage. If that's your bag. But I want to talk a little bit about some Google Drive news that came out. Last week we talked about FileStream. Was it last week or the week before?
I think it was last week.
Last week we talked about Google FileStream. Well, you have since been accepted into the early adopters program, and I got my email actually last night, and so I have actually installed it on a couple machines, and you've installed it for like a week now or so. What has been your experience with FileStream?
It's been wonderful. Besides that one little caveat that they have with the secure boot thing, it's been great. It runs really fast, which if you've ever used any of the other cloud storage mounting software, they tend to lag when you go to load a folder with a lot of files in it. This one does not, and it just works. I hate to say it like that, but it works. You open a Google Doc in it, it automatically opens up Chrome to that document. You can put other documents in it. I mean, it works like a normal file system should. I really like it, and I'm probably going to deploy it out to every machine in my district after it leaves the early program.
Yeah, I just want them to fix that secure boot problem, because that's actually what I'm rolling out right now is Windows 10 Creators Update, which is past the secure boot requirement and stuff like that. So I need them to fix that, but I've put it on a couple Macs, and like you said, I like it. It's fast. I like the fact that you can click on a Google Doc document and it'll open up in the browser or whatever and go straight to that document. I like too that, and one, I use an application called Cloud Mounter, which basically mounts all the different services, Dropbox, OneDrive, Google, and some SFTP or FTP clients as a mountable drive, but they don't give me access to Team Drive that Google just came out with, and this file stream actually gives me access to Team Drive, and so I think that's really neat, and that kind of gives this a leg up on all the other ones. I just hope that they kind of open up that API that these third-party people, because I really like my Cloud Mounter app. It's really good. I like having one app to mount everything. It's very convenient, but I really want access to Team Drive, so I hope they open up that API to other people too.
I imagine they will. I mean, Team Drive's still fairly new, but we're already using it everywhere now. I mean, I pretty much work out of Team Drive now because Google is a collaborative software. So, I mean, Team Drive makes the most sense for it.
It does. I'm actually forcing two groups of people. Well, not forcing. I'm encouraging two groups of people to try to use Team Drive as opposed to using the map network drive that I have on the server to see. Just because, for one, I mean, without a VPN, they don't have access to their files, and I don't really give VPN access to all of my users, just the select few, mainly me, who needs to get back in for whatever reason. And so having everything in Google Drive means that they have access to everything. And with FileStream, it doesn't have to be local on their machine like the old Google Sync client did. And I think that's great. But not only that, Box.net actually announced that they're going to start doing the same thing. OneDrive is now doing it, even though they were doing it before, took it away, now they're doing it again. iCloud Drive started doing it with Sierra, which people have some horror stories with the way iCloud Drive's implementation of it has been, so hopefully that gets better with High Sierra. And Dropbox for Business actually allows it, but they haven't actually turned it on for Dropbox Personal yet. So this seems to be the way to go, is to storing everything in cloud storage and just streaming it like you would music, TV, whatever, on your computer, and have access to all of your things, but you don't have to pay for lots of storage in your computer to maybe save you some cost on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best feature of it. And with us education customers, it's actually unlimited size. So it's incredible. I mean, you have an unlimited drive on whatever you're on.
Okay, so on your Windows machine, I'm assuming that's what you're running it on.
Correct.
Is it right click properties? It's been a while since I've done this. Well, right click properties.
It'll actually show it, and if you go in the computer, it just, you know, it gives you a little bar graph of how much it's used. Mine shows 10 terabytes free of 10.01.
Mine actually just shows like 1 terabyte of 1.1 terabytes. It's not showing the 10, it's just showing the 1.
I'm half tempted to write a script to just fill it up. See what happens when you hit 10.02.
Just to see what happens, if it'll bump up to 20.1, 20.2 terabytes or whatever.
I mean, that's cool.
I really want to know if there's somebody out there that actually has 10 terabytes of storage in their Google Drive.
I can't even imagine how much that cost.
Even if it was education and it was free, I mean, I can't even fathom that amount of data. I guess maybe a bigger district may have that much data, but...
Well, I don't think I have the culling turned on my Duplicati backup, so we may get there soon.
There you go. Yeah, because we're doing Duplicati to the Google Drive. I'm actually relying on that too, because my backup solution that I was moving to decided to kill support for Windows Server, so I can't even install it anymore, which makes me sad.
You know, this opens up a pretty interesting thing we could do. Google Drive, the streaming files, actually creates a drive letter. So can we use that drive letter like a traditional drive letter in something like your backup or Windows NT backup or any of those normal solutions?
I don't see why not.
I don't have a problem doing it, but I just wonder. I wonder how it would work. Because I know right now you have to be signed in for it, but could we automate that?
Could we cheat?
Yeah. Well, not cheat. Automate.
Well, I know on the Mac, and I did this out of curiosity. I kind of tried this, and I used my Cloud Mounter drive. I didn't try the Google file stream, but the file stream app does basically like Cloud Mounter does. It basically just mounts it as a drive on the Mac. And so I opened up my Backblaze software to see if it would kind of see it as an external drive. It didn't see it, so I can't back up my Google Drive to my Backblaze backup.
So what if you created a SIM link to that folder in one that Backblaze already sees?
Now that would probably work.
Hmm. We got to play around with this.
Yeah, that's intriguing because I can back up everything.
Yeah.
All of my data.
You know what? Let's see if we can make Samba shares, Windows file shares, out of FileStream.
Create you a server, enable DFS namespaces, and then always keep it logged in, and then just pick that drive in that shared folder as a namespace. Yeah,
there's our home directory folder.
Why is my home directory not working? Oh, my server rebooted. I need to log in. Hold on.
Yeah, hold on. Give me a second.
And all of a sudden, everything's stored in Google Drive.
We're going to have to play around with that.
That's something to think about, because isn't that the goal? And that's kind of what we want to talk about today is how are we using cloud storage and why would we want to, and maybe some positives and negatives about it. Isn't that the goal, to move everything to the cloud eventually? Get everything, like everybody's data, off of our servers and put it in the cloud?
Well, it's definitely the corporation's goal, especially Google's and Microsoft's and whatnot, is to get everything up into their clouds versus your local. And there are huge benefits to it. I mean, first off, I don't have to power those servers. I don't have to maintain them. I don't have to configure them. I don't have to do anything to them. They're there. They're just a service to me.
I mean, the main advantage to me is, like I mentioned earlier, is like they will have access to their files everywhere they're at. Whether they're on a home computer, their work computer, their phone, their tablet, wherever, they will always have access to their files. And if they use the Google tools to actually create the files, like Google Docs and Sheets and stuff, they can pretty much edit those files on anything.
Yeah, I mean, they have full functionality on every device.
And I know, like, you can store, like, Word documents and Excel documents in Google Drive. That's not a problem. And you can open them up on your machine just fine. But I know, like, when you're using it, when you're using the Word apps and the, when you're using the Office apps on your phone or your iPhone or your iPad, it makes it a little bit difficult to get access to those files when they're in Google Drive, because it's almost like you have to use like the document picker or use the document providers that Microsoft actually gives you access to inside of Office. And I think right now all you can do is like SharePoint, OneDrive, and
Dropbox,
I think.
Yeah.
Maybe Box too. That might be a new one.
You know,
so I mean, it's almost like they need to open that up to Google Drive too. But like I said, if you just use the Google-provided tools, then you won't have that problem.
Yeah, we may not have that problem on iOS moving forward with that new Files app. It may take control.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Oh, I know. I want to see it. I just want to mess with it. I mean, we all need that functionality on our mobile devices. But maybe they're going to take over with that, the underlying file picker, which would make things so much simpler.
I hope so. I really hope they replace the document picker with that new Files app, or make a document picker that kind of ties into that file app. And then on the flip side of that, I really hope that all those document storage providers actually update their apps to be able to tie into that.
Well, I think it's going to be such a public facing feature that they're going to have to.
Well, if it's anything like when they introduced split view and the multitasking, the side by side multitasking in the iPad, Google waited until iOS 10 came out before they actually implemented it, even though it came out in like iOS 9. And so Google isn't real quick on the draw when it comes to developing for iOS. But you know what? I get it. Why would you be? Let's focus on Android. That's our product first.
Of course. And I always like to call that iPad split view Windows 8 mode.
Yeah, Windows 8 mode, because that's pretty much what it is, because the little slide bar in the middle acts just like it. But what are some other things that you're doing with cloud storage besides just storing drives? Obviously, we're using Duplicati, so we're using that as a backup solution. Whether that is supported or not, it's working.
Supported.
In quotes. We'll go with that. It's supported by us.
Yes. Well, honestly, I'm still in those phases at our school where I'm just trying to move our traditional file shares up into the cloud, as just a chance to alleviate cost on us, being we have unlimited space, and now that we have team drives, we have those traditional file shares that we had in the past without a user having to go in there and share. I'm just wanting to get my stuff up there so I don't have all these extra storage costs that accumulate.
I'm trying to do that too, but where I'm getting some kickback on is it's not as easy to access as using your traditional home directory is. It doesn't show up under my computer, there's a network driver, whatever. right now.
Yeah, FileStream does fix that.
I need that to happen sooner rather than later, so that I can really have some, I can have some extra, I guess you would say, ammunition to be able to push this change onto these users. Hey, use the cloud storage because it's unlimited. You can store anything in there, and you can have access to it anywhere you want to work.
Yeah, and I'm not going to delete the video files at the end of every year.
Yes, that's true. Or the MP3 files, or whatever, or the pictures.
If Google, if you're listening, please hurry and fix that secure boot error. That's going to stop deployments everywhere. And
so, why do you think they're doing? Why do you think that's a problem?
I think that, you know, honestly, I'm really not sure what's going on there, because they are not doing anything that would actually affect the boot process. And when we did the installation, I didn't get anything about an unsigned driver or anything of that nature. I'm really not sure what's going on, and they haven't really clarified exactly what is with that bug, except it just doesn't work.
I wonder if it's something Microsoft did in version 1607 that Google hasn't like found a workaround for yet. Like maybe if it was a Microsoft introduced thing and not necessarily something that Google's doing.
It could be. I would love to get some more details on it from them, but they just haven't really talked about it. I imagine they're not even ever going to tell us what happened. They're just going to fix it, and one day it'll work.
Well, I hope it's soon, because I really need that.
Oh, no, I'd love that before August 1.
Well, I'm starting a Windows 10 rollout, and I'm starting with the latest version that I could download. Why install something? Why install the anniversary update when I can just go ahead and install the creators update?
Exactly.
And so I would really love that feature.
Yeah, and if you're using Windows, you should be using Secure Boot. It's a feature there that's going to protect you from malicious boot attacks.
Now, I do have some non-Dell desktops that I'm putting Windows 10 on. I don't think they do Secure Boot, so I'm wondering if it will run in the Creators update on that.
If they have UEFI support for booting, they should have Secure Boot support in there too. You might have to update the BIOS in there to get the newer certificates for Secure Boot, but it should be in there.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just hope Google just fixes it.
Yes, I'd rather just fix it and not have it a non-issue.
So, what do you think are some negatives to using cloud storage? I know there's a lot of positives, but there's got to be some negatives too.
Biggest negative is, of course, your internet connectivity. I mean, here now, our bandwidth is 10 gigabit everywhere. I don't have 10 gigabit to the internet. So everybody's going to end up sharing a 300 meg pipe, at our school anyway, to access all their files. That's the biggest negative.
Your internet provider internet access, that's the one point of failure when it comes to doing everything in the cloud.
Yes.
I mean, FileStream does give you the option to make some things available offline. I know, like, if it's a regular file like Excel or Word, you can right-click in a Mac. I know that's from a Mac side. You can right-click and say make available offline, or you can make it available online only. But you can't, I couldn't do that with, like, a G Sheet file or a GDoc file.
They don't allow any of that to work offline unless you've enabled offline support within the Google Drive app, and then you wouldn't be able to access it from within Drive Sync right now. You'd still have to go to Google Drive and hit the offline page to get it. I mean, the other thing that I can see a problem being is with large files. You know, those files that are 7 gig, 8 gig. I mean, especially if it's like an ISO file, something that has to download completely before it starts to open.
Yeah, or like a video production class that's got a lot of video files that they're pushing up and down to the cloud.
Yeah, and I have one of those actually beside the room I'm at right now. And some of their files, I don't think they've really spent a lot of time on compression, get like stupid big for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you got to run it through those H.264 converters. Get that file size down. Handbrake that stuff.
Yeah, so I can see it being a problem there on the large file support. Mainly those things that the files don't support streaming for usage. So like the MPEG-4s for videos, where MKV would support streaming the file when working. I see that being an issue. And perhaps encrypted files too.
Yeah, that's true. Encryption. That's always a thing, because you got to make sure you got your keys and everything else. And just making sure that it uploads right and downloads right and where you can access it. I guess the one thing that I lose sleep about over when it comes to dealing with cloud storage, it's really the same thing that I lose sleep about as far as like when I buy movies and music and stuff like that. What happens if Apple goes bankrupt? What happens if Google goes out of business? What happens if all these companies just shut their doors or they get bought by Verizon like Yahoo does?
Ooh.
And what happens what happens to your data? I mean, that's really it. That's one of the things that I worry about. Now, that's all hypothetical. More than likely, it's not going to happen, but because those companies are just too big and they're making too much money. But I mean, Google, they have a tendency sometimes just to kill things out of the clear blue. What happens one day if they're like, "Hey, we just want to quit doing this"?
Yeah, I mean, what do we do? If it becomes a Reader.
Yeah, what if it becomes Google Reader, my favorite Google product of all times?
You know, and that's a scary scenario, and because those SLAs, they don't translate to a new company. Those SLAs were with the old company. If someone was to, let's say, purchase Google,
they may come back and say, "Hey, we don't want to offer unlimited storage for education. You're going to have to start paying for it like all the other businesses do."
And you know, honestly, I can see that happening in a few years, especially with some of us abusive users doing backups up to them.
Yeah, we're going to get caught one time.
You know, I haven't read anything where it says you can't do that. In fact, they're adding backup support into their sync products.
They are. I mean, that was a new story that I skipped over by accident, was that they're going to be able to back up entire folders on your computer. So,
I mean, that's just asking for it, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, if you don't want people to back up to your service, don't...
Don't make it a feature.
Don't make it a feature. But speaking of backing up, how do we handle cloud backups? I mean, we're using Vault. Google
yes.
Vault. Because that's another thing that's free with education. Now, if it's a business or another kind of company, or I don't even know if they offer it for personal.
They don't offer it for personal, but Vault used to not even be free for education.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that was a big thing, too. It was like, hey, if you Vault's coming for free, but if you want access to it early, just get on the chat support and ask for it. So.
Yeah, I remember when I was in education, then I left for oil and gas, and then I came back and Vault was suddenly free. I was like, woohoo, I couldn't afford it before, but now I got it.
So now we're able to do file retentions. And so not only does my Duplicati back up my server to Google Drive, but then Vault grabs my Google Drive backup and stores it in Vault. So I actually have my data in two places.
I'm so sorry, Google Drive team. So sorry.
Don't make it a feature.
Heck, you gave me a drive letter. You have no idea what I'm going to do to you next week now.
But besides Vault, there's also some other companies out there that do backups of your cloud storage providers. I can't think of any offhand, but I do know that there are some that kind of tie into your Google Apps account and can actually back up your files. And mainly, they kind of sell the features like file retention policy, because we're having to do that for like government reasons. We have to hang on to files, and so it's kind of like a file retention policy. I think Gaggle is one of them that does it.
They do, and they kind of advertise it as a business continuity feature.
Yeah, just so like, so you never lose access to anything.
Yeah, it's that little checkbox you can check on your paper.
Yeah. Well, you can check it off anyway if you got Vault. Just turn it on. It works great.
And I guess you could always open another account and back up to there, because, you know, sometimes some accounts quit working and others keep working.
That's true. But right now, I'm just backing up to one account, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, yeah. I won't say the name of that account because they may cut it off.
Exactly. But it's not too hard to figure out. It probably says backup in it.
It may be backwards.
Up, back.
Yeah, there you go.
But what if you don't want to do Google Cloud Storage and you want to roll your own thing? How can I roll my own cloud storage solution?
Well, private cloud has always been a topic in business because of trade secrets. They can't keep things like that in a public infrastructure because, well, they're a trade secret. Let's say someone maliciously got access to it, and well, now you're losing millions of dollars. So there are tons of products out there, a lot of them open source, that you can build your own private cloud. One of them is not really a cloud product, but it seems to be one that a lot of people attach to because of how simple it is to use, called FreeNAS. And I know you've used this one in the past too, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's built on OpenBSD. Sorry, FreeBSD. You just got me with open earlier. And they did just release a new version this past week, version 11, which takes a lot of the bugginess away.
Yeah, I heard 10 was real bad.
Oh, 10 was awful. I mean, it was one of those things. You installed 10, you ran it for a week, and you're like, dear God, how can I roll back? Because it just stunk. I don't know how it did, but things just were buggy. It was slow. It would lock up. The jails wouldn't work properly. But they've fixed all that now with 11, and they've even gave us some new features. They gave us a nice, new, pretty UI. That's all HTML5 now. It's awesome. And they even added the Beehive hypervisor into it, which is BSD's hypervisor. So it's kind of like a hyperconverged platform now.
You know, I could see why some people would want to do this route, like you said. Mainly, I think about maybe the medical and health fields, because that data has to be protected because of like HIPAA requirements and stuff like that. But I guess there's nothing wrong with having an on-premise cloud.
Oh, no, not at all. And like I was saying, though, FreeNAS is not really a cloud, but people tend to gravitate to it because it does have a good reputation.
Well, it's on-premise, but I mean, you could present it to your people as like, oh, it's in the cloud.
Yeah. Never mind that cloud's behind the next door down the hall.
Yeah. What's that loud noise? Oh, that's just the cloud.
It's raining.
But you know, with it being on premise though, it does give you a little bit more control as far as like your backups and like keeping things secure, and you know that like as long it gives you just a little bit more control over like hardware failure and stuff like that. So you have a little bit, you're not at the mercy of somebody else to fix your problems whenever you have a problem.
And it does fix one of those negatives that we were talking about earlier, which is bandwidth. If it's local, you have your full bandwidth capabilities.
Or if you actually lose internet access, you still have your full access to it as long as you're on site.
Correct. Well, moving on through some of the other ones, there's one of them written in Go. It's called Minio. And basically what it does is it implements an Amazon S3 compatible storage solution for block storage. What you do with the block storage is up to you. It has all of the distributive features, so you can have failover, replication, all of those things built into it. And it has a really simple UI for people to use. Now, the configuration of all of it is not done through that UI, but say you wanted to add another storage bucket or upload a file real quick, you can do those things in the UI. And it's just a real simple solution that gets you an S3 compatible private cloud.
And so that's Amazon, right?
Well, it's not made by Amazon, but the S3 protocol was done by Amazon. They did keep it compatible. You know, some of the open source private cloud solutions like Ubuntu's, their Eucalyptus project uses S3 compatible storage. This would be one of those backends you could tie to it.
Oh, so that means you could run your Minio in Amazon Web Service because it's S3?
Well, no, Minio is an S3. So it lets you have an S3 service locally.
Oh, I got you. And so, like, if you have an application or whatever that had Amazon S3 as like a connection point,
yes,
You can point it to there.
Yeah.
You know, I might need that.
It's actually really cool. It's real simple to install because it is Go. It's just, in fact, I think you can do it with Docker if you really want.
That's neat because I got some things that I'd really like to. I know I had one thing that I could be able to mount. I wish I could mount my B2 storage, my Backblaze business storage. I wish I could mount that locally for whatever reason, but can't. But I know I could mount S3. So
yeah, and S3 is cool.
Think about.
Next one I really like. It's actually my favorite choice. It's called Gluster FS. It's an open source distributed file system. It's done by Red Hat. It lets you do a distribution as a replication volume or a mirrored volume or an expanded volume. One of the things that I'm using it for here is I have a recording server that I have a Gluster instance installed locally, and I present that local storage over the Gluster protocol to the recording application. So later on, if I need to add more storage, I can just throw another storage server up and add it to that pool, and then application's video storage volume automatically expands.
Yeah, because expanding Linux partitions is not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No, and I mean, it's one of those things that the application should have access to add multiple storage points, but it doesn't. So you just kind of have to work your way around it.
Yeah.
And it does work really well.
Or you just go my route and you just make your Linux server extremely huge and hope you don't fill it up.
No, and what I'm doing is I have all the volumes as 2 terabytes, and I just, they're XFS volumes, and I just present them all at a storage pool.
And so it'll just kind of distribute it all over throughout all of them.
Yeah, and like I said, it gives me the fluidity to increase and decrease it well and put them at different locations. Heck, I could put one at my house to be on there if I really wanted. And another interesting thing about Gluster is if you are an open source fan, the Overt project, which is another Red Hat project, it's a private cloud application. They actually support hyperconvergence with KVM through Gluster. Pretty cool.
Very cool.
I know you love all these open source acronyms and whatnot, Matt.
Hey, you know, it's just a lot of, open source, it has its place. when you're new to a lot of things, open source is like, it's great because it's got a great price.
It can be daunting, the learning curve on it, though.
And a lot, and the thing that the only problem I have with open source, and things have gotten better, I will say this, things have gotten real better, mainly because DigitalOcean and Linode write better tutorials than anybody else on the face of the planet. But getting support whenever you have a problem, you're sort of just at the mercy of yourself to try to figure out. And so
it always
makes me a little scared to like dive in and try to learn something new and put it in production right away. And so that's my only thing.
Yeah, and fortunately, a lot of these projects that I'm mentioning are from the Red Hat Corporation, and they do have commercial support available for them. So like the next one I have on here is called Ceph. It's very similar to Gluster, but instead of a distributed file system, it's a distributed block storage system. So it's more like a traditional SAN, the way it operates. But everything else, pretty much like Gluster, you can present them in mirrored. You can present them as replicated and mirrored. I mean, it basically lets you emulate the RAID architecture in a software-defined storage environment.
But the other next one you have on your list, Windows Storage Spaces, using DFS and stuff, that's actually something I'm kind of getting into, is using DFS, and I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, DFS has got some real benefits. And with Storage Spaces, they've kind of upped their game on it. They have, instead of using your RAID controller or whatnot in there, you can use Windows Storage Spaces to add each individual drive into a storage pool and let Microsoft handle all of the redundancy and whatnot to it. It gives you a lot of flexibility within Server Manager as far as managing your storage, because you can do it all on the fly without rebooting and going into controllers.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's very cool.
That is the way to go. I mean, it's tempting just to start. I mean, I kind of have my own on-premise cloud with my SAN, and I'm not really presenting it to people as local as cloud storage, just mainly home directories. But I mean, I guess I could change the way I'm doing that, but I want everybody to go to Google. I don't want to do local stuff anymore. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't want local.
Yeah, and the only other two things I had on there, they're pretty much the same product. They just, one's a fork of the other one. It's called OwnCloud. And OwnCloud basically is an on-premise Dropbox clone. It gives you a nice, pretty UI to see your files, to do work with your files. It has syncing clients on all the different platforms. It really does kind of do everything. They've managed to integrate like LibreOffice in there for doing actual real document editing, and they have things in there for collaboration and the whole Office user suite. You know, you have your calendars and all that stuff, and they've implemented their own version, their own kind of OAuth for file sharing, so you can share with anyone even if they're outside of your own cloud.
It kind of reminds me of Pogo Plug.
Yeah, it's a pretty grown-up Pogo Plug, and then Nextcloud is just a fork of it with better plugins.
Yeah, Pogo Plug was cool because it's like you would run it, and then like wherever you ran it, everything just sort of stayed in the sync. It was like Dropbox, but you had to use your own storage to actually do it. It's really neat. And we had those Seagate hard drives that actually had the little stand that was a Pogo thing, and then like we hacked those up and did like media servers out of them, so that was pretty fun.
Oh yeah, I loved those little. They didn't last long because people kept buying them up for. Because it was before the real Raspberry Pi thing happened, and that was what people used.
You could make a web server out of it.
It was great. Oh, you remember that little wall wart that I had with a server running on it in our old
offices? I do remember that. That was pretty neat, too.
It was ahead of its time. It sure stunk compared to what we have now.
Now you can do everything with a Raspberry Pi and an SD card, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, and that's our show. If you have any questions or feedback regarding anything we discuss here, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm found at @Feeks, Matt is found at @TwistOfMatt, or you can contact the show account at @EducatingTech. You can also send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com. For more episodes, visit educatingtech.net. You can also find links to subscribe and have our podcast dropped in your favorite podcast app automatically. Thank you for listening.
All right. We'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.